Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Toledo, your host on Dent Time PDR, a podcast about PDR training, tutorials, interviews, and much more. So get something to eat, drink, and start pushing. It's time to listen. Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Mike Toledo. Welcome to Dent Time PDR. This is episode number 2. And I am not going to have a guest on this one. This is going to be a solo because I want to introduce myself. I should have done it on the first podcast. In case you are just coming on and you're wondering what this podcast is about, it is mainly a lot about the trials and errors and challenges about paintless dent repair. I bring on guests who are very good at PDR, past students, just different aspects of paintless dent repair and the challenges that goes on with it. And it could be about tools usage, about how you can apply certain tools that have changed the way I've done PDR or someone else has done PDR. Now, if you want to hear some of that stuff, you can hear that on PDR Tool Time. We talk a lot about that, and I'm not on there as much. I used to be a host on there full time, but I am just not because I'm obligated to my own things that I have going now. So if you want to check that podcast out, check it out, pdrtooltime.com. Also check out PDR College and check out Tactical PDR from John Hiley. So now that's out of the way, I want to talk about like how I started, but I do have a couple stories to tell you about how I got into it. So in 1991, that's when I started, but my stepdad got into it early 1990. And I remember him getting into it and going for training in Riverside, California. And but before that, he was a crazy Italian, small Italian guy. Okay. Short man syndrome, was always irritated and mad at everything. But one thing he did do very well was keep his car very clean. And every time he got a door ding, he'd go straight to the body shop. So that happened a lot. And he'd go to the body shop and get it fixed and get it painted. And it was always a great paint job. One day he got it out, and within an hour he got another door ding, and he just flipped his lid, man. I thought he was going to choke the lady out. And my aunt, because he kept talking about it through Thanksgiving, and my aunt says, you know, there's a guy that says he can do dents without having to paint. And my stepdad's, oh, get out of here. No way. And lo and behold, short story, he comes over and takes out the dent about an hour. My stepdad was just blown away. He could not believe it. He practically threatened the guy and says, you're going to train me. And later on, a month later, my stepdad had some tools, had a light. Now back then, the light, I wish I would have kept my light. The light was made out of like iron rod and, you know, that square that those iron gates are made out of, the same kind of stuff, the frame of my light. And it looked just like an ultra light, to be honest with you, an ultra dent tools light. And if you haven't seen one of those, go look it up. They still the best base, in my opinion, for a light. It's very sturdy. So I had to pull this sucker out. And so it was heavy. That's all I'm going to say. It was heavy. And he pulled this light out, and you know, and he got all these tools, and I had no idea, you know, what these tools were. And then he'd go off, you know, in the morning and come back late at night, about 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, all day, come back like 6, 7 when it was dark at this time. And he'd be exhausted. He'd come home, he made like $100. And to me at that time, $100, I was like, that's not bad, you know. But at night, though, he was a musician, so he was able to sustain him working and making $100 a day doing PDR. And then one day he comes back a little bit earlier, and as he's coming back earlier, he's making more money. And as time went on, he'd get home and, you know, 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock, he's got $1,000. I'm like, holy crap. And I remember in the garage just banging away. I just thought, man, he's never going to get it. And lo and behold, he did. And so that summer, the following summer, he was really busy. He had a place in Palm Desert. And so we were in San Diego, but in Vista, North County. And he would drive from, you know, our house in San Diego all the way to Palm Desert. Wednesday through Saturday, and he'd do accounts out there. And then the days he was here on the weekdays, he would do in San Diego. And so he was getting kind of overwhelmed, you know, he's super busy. And he said, Mike, you want to learn how to do dents? And I'm 18 years old at that time. And I was thinking about it, and I was going to college. And then he asked me one more time, and I said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and do it. So I went out there in Palm Springs in the summer when I wasn't going to school, and it was hot as hell. It was hot as hell, 128 degrees. I went to pick up a tool in the middle of the sun, and it burnt my hand like Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, he grabbed that emblem, whatever that was, and it left a burn mark on my hand, man. It hurt like hell. It was very miserable. I had to watch my stepdad do dents. He wasn't that type of tech where he would explain things to you. He would just be like, here, watch me. And I was just dying. I remember one time it was 128 degrees and it was hot. So let me get to the personality of my stepdad. And my stepdad technically was the greatest teacher in so many wrong ways. And let me explain. For one thing, I used to be so embarrassed when I used to go with him to retail jobs. And one of the retail jobs we were at is he was looking at a BMW. There was a dent in the roof, and the lady says, yeah, I got a dent in the roof. And he goes, okay, well, let me take a look at it. She goes, okay, I'll be in the house. And he lights up his cigarette and he goes into the car, and he's got a cigarette in his mouth as he's looking inside this car. And I'm like, hey, Daryl. I called him Daryl because he's my stepdad. Daryl, hey man, you got that cigarette in your car, in your hand. She's not gonna like that. Get out of here. Don't worry about that. Let me just bring around. And he just kind of mumble, and you know, he's always one of those guys that knew it all. You know, don't tell him anything. So, anyways, about 5-6 minutes later, he still hasn't ashed his cigarette, and he's trying to figure a way to get into this sunroof. And I'm like, Daryl, you're ash. And he's just ignoring me. And this, all of a sudden, the lady comes out. Oh my gosh. What are you doing? Are you smoking in my car? And he looks quickly to her, like surprised. And guess what? The ash dropped in the seat of the car all over the place. Oh my gosh. This lady flipped out. Oh my God. Did you get out of here? Get you and your kid out of here, yada, yada. And she just yelled back and forth. I mean, it was the most embarrassing thing ever. I wanted to hide behind a rock, and I couldn't believe it. My stepdad, it's no big deal to him, right? We go to the next job. And the person's like, yeah, I got a dent right here. Well, how much is it? And somebody's stepdad at the time, he smoked these Pall Malls, dude. Okay. Now these are non-filter cigarettes. And he'd have us, and it's always in his left pocket. You got to picture this guy. He's like about 5'6", right? 5'5", I don't know, something like that. And he's got a pack of Pall Mall with his t-shirt with a pocket on the left side with his Pall Malls, right? And so the customer's going, okay, well, how much is it going to be? And so he's kind of eyeballing the car, and then he goes to reach for his cigarettes. He's not saying anything. He's just looking at it. Pulls one of the cigarettes out, kind of shakes the box, pop, 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 pop. You know how they hit it with their hand, and then he gets one out, he puts it in his mouth, and he sits there and he's looking at it, and he lights it up, and he's looking at it, and the customer's kind of looking at him like weird, and he has to spit out the tobacco little parts in it, you know, because it's non-filtered. And he's looking, eyeballing it, And he's all, and $1.50. And the customer's just looking at him going, all right, let's do it. And then he'd go, Mike, get the tools. I'm like, all right. So I get the tools. I mean, he's got this big old heavy, you know, tool sets, you know, yada, yada. And I'm bringing all this stuff out, unpacking the line, I'm putting it together. You know, it's a chore, this thing to get all these tools out. And it was a chore. And so the customer's watching this. And at the time, he's sitting there, drills a hole. Whoa! And the customer's kind of like, whoa, are you drilling a hole? He's like, yeah. Yeah, that's the way we're going to get it out. And the customer's like, oh, all right. And drilling, you know. And so, oh, first of all, I forgot to tell you, back then we didn't have drill bits, regular drill bits. So the drill, you know, if you use a regular drill bit, it would slide and roll all over the place. So you had to punch a hole first and then drill with a regular drill bit before hole bits came out, before the unit bits came out, things like that. So he's drilling in the side of the car. And I'm like, gosh, man, I don't know. This customer's he looks super nervous. And the customer was super nervous. So my stepdad goes, Mike, get Malmo. And so at the time, and we still do, I name my tools. And you guys, if you've heard me before on other videos or any podcasts, I have a tool called Mo Money. All right. So that's where I got the names from. But I named that tool myself. But anyways, he named his tools, and his tools were called, one of his big rods was called Malmo. So we would get Malmo and he'd stick it through the hole, and he's getting ready to push. And the customer's like, yeah, because you know, these customers have never, ever seen or heard of PDR. So they're curious as heck. And we're talking 1991 here. Okay, 1991. I'm 19 years old. I'm going with my stepdad, and here he is. He's getting ready to push. The customers look at it, and here you go. Yeah! You son of a gun, you motherfucker. You know, he's cursing like this. He's saying it. Now, I'm not the type of person that likes to curse on purpose, so you hear me say a couple here and there, but I'm trying to keep it PG because you might be listening with your kids or something like that. So, and he's sitting there doing it again. You son of a, you bastard, you girl, you motherfucker, you know, and he's talking like out loud, and the customer's watching right in front of right, and he's like, oh, okay, and I'm like wanting to hide behind the rock, and here he is again, lights up, and throws his cigarette after he's done, throws it right outside the garage, doesn't put it out, it's still lit on fire, smoking, like outside of his driveway. And the customer's just like, because the customer's like, today's customer wouldn't put up with that, okay, because they've heard of PDR or whatever. But the guy was so amazed, he just let my stepdad do anything he wanted. And my stepdad at the time thought he was the shizzo, man. And to be honest with you, he was a really good tech. So what I'm trying to say to you is that I learned a lot based on what he did that taught me what not to do. So I did not ever want to like be that flamboyant or be that type of, you know, arrogant in that type of, you know, repair. I'm very thoughtful when it comes to people's, you know, personal belongings or their vehicle, you know, like most of us do, right? Not my stepdad. He didn't care. His way, the highway, and he didn't care. And he charged whatever he wanted to. He was expensive, my stepdad, because he knew how much the body shop was. And that's how it should have been everywhere. And it really was back in the day, and it should be still today. But that's a whole new topic. Now, let's get into one more repair. We go to another customer. We're not talking the same day. We're talking in different times in that year. And I went to a Carmen Ghia customer with him. and brand new restored black Cameron gear. And my stepdad's pushing on the fender, doing the same old spiel. This time he had nowhere to throw his cigarettes out, so he threw it on the floor and he just put it out. By the time we were done, he had 12 cigarettes on the floor, right? He got the dent out, but he didn't get to this part. I'm getting ahead of myself. He got it out, but he had little micro high spots. And you guys know what happens when you have nice texture to it, but you want to get rid of that texture, so you color sand it out. So he got, at the time, he got some sandpaper, and he's not the type that you would get water or spray bottle or anything. He would, Mike, go give me this to water. That's not what he'd say. He wouldn't even say anything. The customer would leave and he'd go and spit it right on the sandpaper. Disgusting, number one, because I had to rub it. It was, and so I was actually just color sanding it. And then I said, you know what? I'm not going to go any further than that. He goes, give me that. And he takes it and he sands past the paint. And the customer didn't see it yet. Notice I said yet. And he'd go, Mike, give me the black marker. I'm like, what? What are you going to do? I gave him the black marker and he would just fill it in, right? Customer comes out, seeing him using the black marker on the Karma Gear, on the part that he, busted through the paint through. Are you touching it up with the black marker? And he said, Nah, I'm not. I'm just kind of just peeling in some chips here and there. He's like, this ain't no chips. I just got out of the body shop. And so sooner or later, these kind of stories, like right here, was my stepdad just at his best. Okay. Best that just didn't care, but he was a hell of a good tech. So my next point is that, listen, just because my stepdad was a great tech, he was a really good tech too. That fact, when he was at his prime, he would work on a dent for an hour and a half. I mean, it looked glass to me. Now, granted, I wasn't as experienced as he was, but it looked great. And I knew how to look at a dent by then. But he would walk away, we'd pack all his stuff, and then he'd take one more last look at it, and he'd look at the dent, and he'd see a slight something in there, right? Mike, get my tools again. Jeez, man, that took me like 20 minutes to get all that stuff out and set it up. So another 20 minutes, another 45 minutes on the dent he took, another 20 minutes of putting the stuff back. But he was a perfectionist when it came to that. And that's what I learned too. I learned that he really cared about it. He talked about dents all the time. At dinner, lunch, my mom was sick of it, but that was his passion. But unfortunately, he was not good at training. So how he trained me was how I don't train people today. That's because he taught me how not to train. And you don't learn anything, and not very much, just by watching full time. You're not going to do it. You shadow somebody only because you want to see the potential. But if you want to learn, you don't shadow somebody full time, or you better be pushing more than you're watching. Let's just put it that way. And he was, like I said, not a good trainer. So I'm not going to get into too much of that beyond that. Him and I, in 2000, we went our own ways. From 1991 through pretty much almost just about through 2001, I worked for him. It was a company called Dent Man at the time. My mom, she passed away in 2000. So she was only 50 years old, passed away of cancer. And in 1996. Let me backtrack here, guys. So I had some rough times back in the mid-90s. My sister, she was only 14, and she was with me on a job. And she went out with me to do a repair because I was watching her. My mom and my stepdad went back east because his dad passed away. So I agreed I'll take my sister and watch her for the weekend. I had a basketball tournament. You know, I was going to go back to San Diego and we're just going to have a good time that weekend. So I was on a job on Friday late afternoon and I was working away and all of a sudden I see my sister. She's kind of crying in the truck. And I said, what's going on? And she said, my head hurts. I said, all right, well, hold on. I'm almost done. So I'm working away. I don't know. I can't remember exact time, but it wasn't very long. 5-10 minutes. I look back over and she slumped over and she was drooling and I knew something was crazy wrong. So I grabbed my tools, didn't even tell the customer. The customer saw what's going on? I just grabbed all my tools, threw it in the truck and I jumped in. And so, it was pretty crazy because I thought she had food poisoning and she was still coherent, but not like super coherent. You know, I go, well, do you want me to take you to the hospital? And she said, no, I just want to go home, lay down. And so on the way home, she started throwing up. So that's what I thought, she had food poisoning. So I picked her up, put her in the bed. I got her some, you know, cold rags and all of a sudden her wrist started twitching and getting really tight. And then I knew something was wrong. So I called the ambulance and, they took her to the hospital and then I waited and I was trying to get a hold of my mom and my mom gave me the wrong number to get a hold of her at. She gave me a backwards number. I don't know, she mixed some numbers up. So I thought, okay, well, hopefully it's not too bad. So the doctor calls me and says, hey, he paged me because I was in the cafeteria. He said, hey, you need to come to the emergency room back up here. I need to talk to you. And so I went up there and she said, look, your sister needs emergency surgery. She had a brain aneurysm and we need to open up her skull so her brain can swell. So because if we don't, then it's going to swell against the skull and it's going to cause more damage. So anyways, long story short, I get a hold of my mom and my mom pretty much just had a breakdown right then and there. And 30 days later, we had to let go of my sister at 14. So my mom was very heavily depressed at then. My mom developed cancer soon later. She fought it for a little bit, got it. It was in remission, thought it was good. And then unfortunately, later on, it came back. And in 2000, she passed away. So she was probably my greatest teacher of all. So then I fell in a big depression from 2000 to 2001. I had 27 dealerships. I lost about 90% of them because I had no motivation at that time. So when I was able to get, long story short, I was able to get back on my feet, but not because of anybody else. It was because of myself, because my mom before as well, before then, she was actually a minister. So she wasn't one of those ministers where she would, it's not like, and she would scare you and God said, and yada, yada, and, you know, put guilt trips on you. And believe me, I'm religious, but I'm not the type where I force religion on anybody. And I just don't think that's my point of view, but she wasn't like that. That's how she was. But she was more like God helps those who help themselves. What you put out is what you get back. She believed in that stuff and treating people right, you know, all that good stuff. But before she passed away, she left me a book with just a few things in it. It was a book of her notes, but only three things were in there. And one of those things was, she wrote there, "Michael, always be yourself. Never be anybody else. And remember, only you can help yourself, nobody else." Well, that one right there kind of really nailed the head on, hit the nail on the head. Because I remember even my own parts of my family wouldn't really even see how I was doing, you know, and I was feeling sorry for myself. And it just turned on me. I felt like as soon as I read that again, I felt like I had this new passion to do what I needed to do. I had this vision that, you know what, I'm going to create my own self, my own family, my own future, and I'm going to go out there and attack. And so I got back on the horse. I had this crazy motivation that I was going to be just take it by storm, PDR, because I had a vision that I wanted to do retail, and I didn't want to deal with dealerships either. It wasn't my passion. Dealing with dealerships was not my passion, because I hated the grind. I hated the not be able to control the future of myself. And I said, what can I control and do good at? And that's where I ended up creating Dent Time. Now, me and my cousin actually came up with that, but I have Dent Time now. And anyhow, that's a different story too, that I'm not willing to go into, but I am Dent Time. I created Dent Time in 2001. Me and my stepdad went separate ways because we didn't agree on things after my mom passed away. And that's how Dent Time came about. I know this story is crazy. It's kind of going in and out, but nobody's really heard this story in detail about how I really became Dent Time, how I merged, how I morphed into where I'm at now, and why, what gave me the motivation. It wasn't attention, guys, because social media wasn't then. It wasn't there then. Okay. It was a phone book. That was my attention, if you want to call it attention. I've been in this game a long time, and some people, I think, read me wrong, but that's okay, because I know where I came from. I know the background I am. I have no hidden intentions. And one other thing too is, I want to give back more than I take. The fact that I don't take anything. If you want to look at my training, I charge, yes, quite a few bucks for training, but I give a lot out to my training. I'm not going to say, if you want to know how much my training is, I don't say it publicly, because I'd rather have you contact me and then I can talk to you. But not everybody, I'm going to tell you right now, not everybody who wants to train with me can train with me, because I have to make sure that their head is in the right place too. So based on that, that's how I started Dent Time. And as Dent Time grew and as the internet started coming about, then I created a website. And I had no idea how this website was going to work. I just said, you know what? I was always about being ahead of the curve, like with technology or social media or whatever you want to call it. Back then, it wasn't social media. It was the internet. And really generic website. Looked cool. And so I put it together, and then I started getting calls, and it just took off from there. And I really was more focused on retail. I go, man, this is it. I was so excited. I remember going on DoorDing.com. Then, well, as soon as my website came out, then forums were coming out. And then I was going on to that forum. And I think it still exists too. It's called DoorDing.com. And it was very helpful. It was exciting to talk to other dent guys from all around the world in the United States. Some guys were local in my backyard, but we could actually, that was a place where we could actually talk and share thoughts and maybe ideas and things like that. And everybody was into door dings and wholesale work. Most of them, not everybody, but most of them. And I was more into retail, and I was trying to do the bigger dents at that time. Okay. And there was a couple guys. Sal Contreras was doing bigger dents on there. There's quite a few guys, but not a lot. Okay. Not quite a few compared to like today. And I remember a debate where people would say, are you advertising? Don't advertise big dents. You're going to get the wrong type of person. Wrong. That's a crazy thing about thinking too. It's like, why wouldn't I want to be able to attract everybody? And then I can filter out who I like out of that or want to qualify out of those everybody than just a certain amount of people. That's like going into a club, right? And you're going to ask only a certain amount of girls to dance. When, why not ask them all? And you'll have a better chance of them saying yes with more of volume than you would in just a few. That's how I think. That's how I thought. And I didn't care if I had train wrecks, but you know what? I was getting a majority of calls to filter than just a few, and it worked. So I know this story is going crazy, going from the beginning of how I, you know, my background, and then part of my family, and then how Dent Time evolved, and then how I think, how I operate. And if you want to know how I am personally, is how I am is that I can't sit still. I cannot sit still. I'm one of those techs, I'm still considering myself a tech. I'm one of those entrepreneurs. Because I think every dent company here who's an entrepreneur, I mean, is owns a company, is an entrepreneur. You're just not a dent tech. You're a businessman, right? You're an entrepreneur. You're a social media specialist. At least you're supposed to be. You're a vlogger. You're an editor. You're everything. You're a financial planner. You're an accountant. I mean, you think about it. And it's not just with PDR. If any business you own, technically you have to wear all those hats unless you can afford, you make so much good money that you can hire people to do that, which you will sooner or later. And that's how you should be doing it. See, my thing is I'm all about systemizing my business now. I don't want to wear all those hats. It's too much. Now, you might have heard me mention this, and this is something I say at the Mega Media event. This is something I say at PDR College, is you've got to have a system, right? And I learned this, I think, from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it's stuck with me ever since I read that book or listened to that audiobook. I can't remember which one it was. I don't know if I read it or if I listened to it. I just can't remember it because that's why it sticks with me. And if you guys read that book, you're gonna be really happy you did. It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Listen to the audiobook. And I think it's that one, but I'm pretty sure it is. But here it is. It's like, you don't actually own a business if you don't have a system in place, okay? You actually own a job. Think about that. You own a job if you don't have a system. Because when you have a system, the system runs the business and you run the system. Do you get it? But if there's no system in it, you just own a job. That's it. I mean, I can go on and on about that stuff. But, you know, my thing is I just, like I said, it's all about control. What can I do to control my future? What can I do to make it better? What can I do to make my personal business better? Are there different things that I like to go in different directions? Yes, I have multiple businesses. And honestly, a lot of successful people out there, not even in the business, PDR business, but businesses period, have different avenues of income. Whether it be in the same industry or different industries, it could be different investments, it could be whatever. That's what I call it, investments. And listen, guys, I didn't get where I'm at today because I got lucky, or maybe because I had a 1.9 million video view. That happened because I worked hard to make it happen. I get behind the computer at least 2 to 4 hours a night, minimum. And that's being nice. Back in the day, it was 6 hours at least, and I didn't get off the computer until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and then go back to work and be at a job at 8 o'clock in the morning. Have breakfast too before that. So you don't want to work hard, then don't expect a lot back. And I'm tired of hearing everybody blaming the industry, because it's not the industry, it's yourself. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Because I look back, when stuff gets hard, I look back at the things I just mentioned to you about losing a family member, maybe two within 4 years. Your closest people next to you. And you tell me that stuff is hard. We take things for granted, what things are going. We are in charge of creating our own future. And if it's about being lazy, then, you know, own it. Own it. Because you know, truthfully, if it's you or not. But I don't want to hear it's the industry. Because if you haven't done everything, like the social media, if you haven't gone out there and made a video, if you haven't knocked on people's doors or the body shops, if you want dealerships and wholesale accounts, then go over there. Go get it. Keep hounding them. Keep going in. Every 2 weeks, do it. Bust your butt. Show your face. Friggin' go to their events. Do whatever you got to do. You want to get in the retail market? Run ads. Create videos. Be seen. Have a nice decals on your car. Dress nice. Do whatever you got to do to get out there. But don't tell me too many people or too many things, too many yada yada. The industry isn't the same. Don't get stuck in that. That's an excuse. So that's it. That's how I started. That was the middle part of my life, how I began it, and then how I'm at where I'm at today. And I'm dang proud of it. I'm really proud of it because I worked hard, and I shouldn't be ashamed for how hard I worked. I hope it inspires you. That's what I want. That's what I hope it does. So I hope you guys continue to listen to these podcasts, because they're not always going to be this deep. At least I hope not that deep, but I hope you got something out of it. I do appreciate you guys listening, and I'm Mike Toledo, and I didn't mean to break you down either. I'm just trying to, like, I've never been in a podcast like this where I've actually showed where I came from and how I started and where I'm going. Okay. So I hope you guys continue to listen, and I will talk to you and see you or hear you, or you can listen to me on the next podcast. Take care.